and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kill, your host, all fired up because it's Friday. And Joe Heschmeyer's here. We got Joe with us for a couple hours, and we're going to have a couple of great conversations. Second hour, we'll do an open forum with Joe, so we'll just kind of close the five-day work week. If you're in the commute or whatnot, just whatever question comes to you, you can just call up and ask it. This hour, we're going to talk about the Pope, the papacy, Peter, all that. Is that correct, Joe? Is that what we're talking about this hour?
That is what we're talking about this hour.
Look at you, a lumberjack, all dressed up like a lumberjack. Thanks for getting dressed up for the show today, Joe.
You know, you're the second member of the Catholic Answers team to refer to me as a lumberjack, which I'm not sure yet if it's a compliment or an insult.
Well, it's, I can tell you, I don't know whether it's an insult, but it's not a compliment. sorry, Joe. 888-318-7884 is the number. 888-318-7884. When you're watching the intro of the show, can you see that little video intro they do, or you don't see that part, Joe?
I don't see that part.
All right.
I'm just on Skype.
Just because we were just talking about our clothes, and I've been here 4.5 years this month at Catholic Answers, wore a sport coat, a jacket, you know, one time on the air, one time, and they put that in the intro. Like, no, really, he dresses up. He looks good most of the time. Sure.
Then I think that's what my wife would call a clue. Like they're
yeah, they're trying to give me a clue. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
I'll probably be here another 4.5 years and still won't pick up on that clue. 888-318-7884, our number. Joe Heschmeyer, our guest. Joe, you have called, I mean, you actually in the subtitle to your book, Pope Peter, you called the idea of the papacy the most distinctive doctrine of the Catholic Church. And it's one that is, it's divisive, I suppose, but it's also weirdly unifying at the same time. I'm going to tell you what I mean. I was watching the news this morning while I was doing the dishes that I was supposed to do last night. Okay. So what, why is that? That happens at my house. So what they were talking about and in very affectionate terms on the news, like just the regular news, Pope Francis recovering from his surgery. So the papacy is like, people don't like it, but we kind of do like it. Like I don't know. Do you see where I'm going with that?
I see exactly where you're going. And I think it was George Carlin. This is weird because there's actually two different Catholic related quotes I have from George Carlin. I'm not a George Carlin fan for a lot of reasons. Partly I just don't think he's funny. He's vulgar without being that funny. Sorry, people who like George Carlin. But he had this, I think it was him, he had this great line where he just said, there's only one, the church. It was actually, you know what, as I'm saying this, I think it was actually Lenny Bruce. And I think I read it in Dorothy Day's writing. Dorothy Day was struck by this line from Lenny Bruce. That, like, there are plenty of churches. There's only one, the church. Like, when someone says, the church did X, Y, or Z.
Oh, yeah, right. That's right.
Who they mean.
Yeah. You know something? I've been a Dorothy Day follower for, I don't know, 30 years. And I never knew she liked Lenny Bruce. Never even knew that she listened to Lenny Bruce. So that you learn something every day. So basically,
I don't think they brought it up in her canonization proceedings.
As we talk about the Pope with the guy who wrote the book, Pope Peter, Defending the Church's Most Distinctive Doctrine in a Time of Crisis, maybe you don't accept the Pope. Well, maybe it's because you're not a Christian. Maybe it's because you're a fellow Christian who belongs to an ecclesial communion or a church, you know, could be Orthodox, could be Protestant, could be other, and you don't accept the papacy, and you'd like to share with us why you don't accept the Pope. 888-318-7884. But I'm gonna tell you, there's a lot of Catholics, I think, in one way or another, who don't accept the Pope as well. So if you're one of them Catholics, you can call as well. 888-318-7884. 888-318-7884. And Joe Heschmeyer will be happy to engage you in conversation. So, Joe, what does it mean to accept the Pope? I mean, like I said, Orthodox, they kind of accept the Pope in a way. So what's your take on just that? Because we're saying call if you don't accept the Pope. What does it mean to accept the Pope?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Two things. One, just to cover my bases earlier, I checked, and Dorothy Day does quote Lenny Bruce in The Duty of Delight. So that is where that came from. Two, in terms of what it means to accept the Pope, it means to accept him as having a legitimate authority given to him by Christ, in terms of accepting the office. It doesn't immediately mean that the man is a saint. It doesn't immediately mean that you agree with everything he says or does. Hopefully he's a saint. Hopefully you agree with his decisions. And I don't say that, of course, like, to be clear here, I'm not trying to, like, take any pot shots at Pope Francis or anything of the sort. I'm just explaining that to accept the Pope is to accept a position or an office, in the same way that to accept, like, the two-parent family is not to say every mom and every dad is fantastic or wonderful. It's to accept a structure that we believe is established by God.
Oh, great analogy. I really like your analogies. Do you work on the analogies? Because you always have something that I like. I remember the bear one the other day?
Yeah. You know, that bear one the other day, I think, is in a pre-record that's going to come out on the 30th.
Oh, so only you and I know about it. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yes.
So, sorry, I shouldn't have brought that up.
It's a good, now people are going to want to tune in on the 30th and say, what is this analogy about a bear and double effect?
888-318-7884. A lot of times we got to kind of get warm up to get people to call. But if apparently a lot of people don't accept the Pope, because we got plenty of calls already. If you don't accept the Pope, there's a couple lines open, 888-318-7884. But Joe, I have the feeling we should just go to the folks and let them tell us why they don't accept the Pope. All right.
Yeah, I'd be happy.
All right, Giovanni in Rhode Island, listening on the new and improved Catholic Answers Live app. Happy to have you, Giovanni. Why don't you accept the Pope?
So first, I want to start this off by saying I read Joe's book, and it's actually the first book I read on the Pope, and it was a great book, right? However, recently I saw some quotes that a Protestant friend of mine shared, and for example, I think one of his names is Duffy, a Roman historian, and they say something along the lines that, okay, it wasn't until the late 2nd century that, this modern or this monarchical episcopate existed, right? Before then, it was kind of a group thing, a collegial line of bishops just, making a decision. So this would be more akin to Eastern Orthodoxy or something like that. So, wait, my last question is, how true is this, and does it affect Catholicism in any way?
That's a great question. I love that question. I love that you also cited your kind of sources, because it makes me know that we're at least on the same page and knowing what argument we're talking about. Eamon Duffy is an English historian who is most famous for his work, The Stripping of the Altars. He's a medieval historian, but he's a medieval historian who's written a book called Saints and Sinners, A History of the Popes. And in that book, in chapter one, he begins at the very beginning. But Duffy claims that the papacy didn't exist because no bishop existed in Rome until the mid to late 2nd century. And because Duffy's a really well-respected historian, a lot of people kind of perked up. And Duffy's a Catholic, at least in some way, shape, or form. I don't know how Orthodox, how devout he is, but I know that he has, argued this with other Catholic historians and Catholic philosophers and the like. And a lot of Protestants have picked up on this. I actually wrote a piece for Word on Fire responding to Jerry Walls, and Jerry Walls quotes Eamon Duffy pretty extensively on this point. So just to give an outline of the argument and why it doesn't work. First, it's largely an argument from silence. The claim here is that we don't have any direct evidence of the papacy until the mid to late 2nd century. Why doesn't that work? Well, it doesn't work for a few reasons. Because in the 2nd century, you have plenty of people claiming that the papacy has existed from the beginning. The first and most famous example is in 180, when St. Irenaeus writes in Against Heresies. He gives a whole list of every pope from the time of Peter and Paul down to his own day. He's on pope number 13 or 12 after the apostles. The way that historians who are skeptical kind of handle this is by assuming that Irenaeus is just kind of making this up or inventing this. That's not a good way as a historian to handle your sources, to take unrebutted evidence and assume that the person making the claim is lying. If you did that with any other field, you could say, I don't think China had an emperor. All those sources claiming China had an emperor, they're probably making it up. You could do that with anything, but that's just bad history. Second, Irenaeus isn't even the only one who says this. Hegesippus says this in 160 AD. Tertullian talks about this in 200, where he traces every bishop. So we have three different listings from just the year 200 or before, tracing all the bishops of Rome. That's a pretty big thing. But go back even before that. You have back in 107, you have St. Ignatius of Antioch. And he writes 7 different letters on the way to his martyrdom. And 6 of those letters are either to the churches of Asia Minor or to his friend Polycarp, who's one of the bishops in Asia Minor. The last one is to Rome, and he's writing there to the Christians, telling them not to interfere to stop his martyrdom. Now, people who argue Duffy's position, Raymond Brown, J.P. Meyer, and Duffy himself all make some variation of this argument, make a big deal of the fact that Ignatius, when he's writing to the local churches about church governance, talks a lot about the structure of the church. And Duffy claims that bishops are never mentioned in Ignatius's letter to the Romans. There's 2 things. First, the reason there's a difference in how Ignatius approaches Rome versus everyone else is probably because the theme of the letter is totally different. He's not saying, obey your bishop, here's how church governance ought to look when I'm gone, because he's not dealing with a church that he had oversight of. Rather, he's dealing with the Christians in the place where he's about to die, saying, I'm willing to do this for Christ, don't try to stop my execution. And so it's not surprising that he doesn't get into the details of church governance, because that's not what the letter's about. So it's a bad argument from silence there, because you wouldn't expect him to talk a lot about church governance. Nevertheless, he actually mentions bishops twice in that letter. He mentions, for instance, that because he describes himself as the bishop of Syria, and then later on says once he is executed, once he's martyred, Jesus Christ will be their bishop, meaning like they won't have a bishop because there's only one bishop per diocese or only one bishop per city. So he's writing with the assumption that both he and the Romans understand there's only one bishop per church, which wouldn't be true if the Roman church was governed at this time, as Duffy claims, by a group of co-equal presbyters. But even more than that, I'm sorry for such a long answer here, but I think it's worth really fleshing out kind of the history of the first and second century evidence here, because I think people underestimate how strong the history is. Ignatius actually praises the Roman church and says it presides in charity. He holds it up as the model church. Now, in 6 other letters, he's clear that he doesn't think you even have a church without a bishop, presbytery, and diaconate, that those are the 3 essential elements to the church. So he can't be praising Rome as a model church or even as a church if it doesn't have all 3 of those things. So that's a lot, I know. I'm going to give you 2 final additional things. One is Pope Clement's letter. I allude to this in my book, Pope Peter, that we see Clement writing on behalf of the Roman church, intervening in the affairs of the Corinthian church. In that, he compares the structure of their church to the high priest, and Levites in the Old Testament, which means that Clement is writing, assuming the Corinthians have a threefold structure, and writing as if a threefold structure exists, therefore also in the church he's writing from, the Church of Rome, and that's around 96 AD. That's, you know, about a century before Duffy claims that the episcopacy existed in Rome. You can't really make much sense over the argument that he's making in chapter 42 of 1 Clement without understanding that he's making this threefold structure analogy. Then the very last point, if I may, sorry.
Okay, no, that's fine. Go ahead.
There's an argument of silence that goes in the opposite direction, meaning assume for a second that Duffy and these other historians are right, that you have co-ruling, co-equal authorities in a really powerful city like Rome. And then along comes somebody and just like claims sole authority for themselves and says, nope, I'm the boss. I'm ahead of all of you now. How's everyone else going to respond? You would expect to find all sorts of evidence in the first century or in the second century of people crying out and saying, hey, you're changing the structure of government. You're changing something that the apostles directly set up. You can't do this. Or you'd find someone saying, we need to change it, and here's why we need to change it. Or you'd at least find someone observing in passing that this change occurred. But you don't find anyone observing this, writing for it, writing against it. There's not a single reference to this change ever having happened, or any names of who these co-ruling presbyters were beforehand. We know exactly who the bishops were from the time of Peter and Paul onward. But these imaginary co-ruling presbyters, they don't have names because they don't exist.
Giovanni, I thank you so much for starting us off with that question. Our question of the hour is, why do you reject the papacy? Why do you reject the Pope? If you do, you're welcome to call 888-318-7884. We'll be right back with more after this.
Catch Catholic Answers live anytime at Catholic.com. Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
Now, not only can you watch EWTN anywhere, but anytime with EWTN On Demand. Get on-demand access to more than 12,000 EWTN programs, including live shows and specials, all in one place, all free. Just go to EWTN.com/on-demand. There's nothing to fill out, no memberships required, and no fees to pay. All you need is an internet connection, and you're good to go. EWTN On Demand. Fast, easy, and free.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Joe Heschmeyer is our guest. Joe's the author of a bunch of books, including one on St. Joseph that we'll talk about in a minute. We'll let him say something about it for this year of St. Joseph. But the most relevant book for this hour is Pope Peter, Defending the Church's Most Distinctive Doctrine in a Time of Crisis. Because the question on the table for you, if you want to call and let us know why, is why do you reject the Pope? Why don't you accept the Pope? 888-318-7884. Going down to Florida now. Sandra in Florida. Thank you for your call, Sandra. Why don't you accept the Pope?
Oh, hello.
Hi.
Hi, I'm a Catholic Christian. Why don't I accept the Pope? Because I think he's pretty evil. He's condoning birth. Abortions. He's condoning a one world order. He's honoring a Pachamama. It's like, this is not Catholicism. This is not what we grew up with. We're not a progressive church. We're a traditional church. I want to go to Mass and see a traditional Mass where he says Latin. We're not going to have Latin Masses anymore. This is the leader that goes over the whole world. Like you said, when you say church, what church comes to mind? The Catholic Church. And here is the world leader saying, this is all good. Sorry, I don't understand. I'm very confused.
Okay, Sandra, I'm going to let Joe, address what you said, and then I'll come back to you, see if he gives you a satisfactory answer. So Sandra took the question, particularly Pope Francis. What do you make of what she said?
I want to understand a little more where she's coming from. Sandra, okay. What are you talking about in regards to abortion? I think the Pope has spoken out several times against abortion. What are the pro-abortion or abortion okay?
He's right now. He is for one world government, and they are for abortion. So you cannot be for one world government and say I am not for abortion. I mean, he can't flip flop. He cannot do that. That is not what our church does. Our church, our Catholic Church, is tradition. Tradition. It's like it doesn't matter where you went. You could go to Mass and you always felt the same. It was the same, no matter what country I was in. It was the same Mass. It's not the same Mass.
Yeah, I'm trying to narrow down particular questions just because it's hard if we don't focus on one particular issue to address it. Because if we talk a little bit about the Mass, a little bit about abortion, a little bit about New World Order, a little bit about Pachamama, a little bit about embracing other religions, I'm not sure if we're going to have a very fruitful conversation just because it might be too broad to go very deep. So of the various things you've raised, what do you think is the strongest of your arguments kind of against the legitimacy of Pope Francis?
He is for one world order, which goes against Catholicism.
Okay, what... what's the tenet or text or something? When you say for one world order, I'm not 100% sure I know what you mean by that. And I'm not sure if like the way you're using that means the same thing as when he supports things like multinational kind of governing structures. And what I mean by that is in the history and tradition of the church, there have actually been several times where popes have appealed to multinational governing structures. And that's not just a 20th century thing. If you go back, for instance, to the Battle of Lepanto, that was the Holy League fighting. And the Pope had organized several different countries to fly under the one flag of Christendom to fight against the Ottoman invasion of Europe. So you can actually find, or I mean, for that matter, the Crusades are multinational in terms of their scope. So there's plenty of examples, I think, of the Pope appealing to something higher than national level government, because national level government isn't the highest authority, even on a secular perspective. Otherwise, like if it was literally just national level government was the highest court of appeal, that would make it very hard to do things like have international law, for instance, after the Holocaust, when you have the Nuremberg trials. All of that presupposes that there are things that even a nation state can do, that they're held accountable to the world community in some way, shape, or form. Now, I know, obviously, reasonable people can disagree about what that governing structure ought to look like. But are you saying there's some Catholic teaching that says you can never go above the level of nation?
Wait a minute. Right now, there is an attack on Christianity around the world, right?
Yes. Or there are attacks, plural. No, I said, yeah, yes, like there are attacks, plural.
Yeah,
I don't know that we want to say it's like one organized attack, but yeah.
Everywhere in the world, Christians are attacked right now. And we need our Pope needs to stand for Christians, Catholic Christians, all Christians, because all Christians still recognize Pope Francis as the leader of a church that is very powerful, and he is not defending the Christians. He is not. I'm sorry, he is not, and that is what his job is, and that is what I thought. That's what I thought my whole life, because I still identify as a Catholic Christian. And it's like, he is such a disappointment. But to put a statue, to put some idolatry in our Catholic Church, it's like, that goes against everything we believe in.
Yeah, so I'm purposely trying to focus just on one issue at a time. So if you don't mind, I will leave the Pocket Mama, because that is a big enough conversation, and I think it's been addressed on this show before. But just for the sake of clarity, I'll stick specifically with the whole New World Order kind of idea. Is there some Catholic teaching that you're saying he's violating? Or you're just disappointed in the way that he's governing as Pope?
I think he needs to do, as a world leader, and he is a world leader. He is the world leader, and he needs to stand up for the Christians. That's what.
Yeah, I agree with you. I actually think he's done that on several occasions that maybe don't get as much press coverage because they're not as exciting. Like when the Pope is pro-Catholic, when the Pope is pro-Christian, it's one of those dog bites man kind of stories that the secular media doesn't show much interest in. But the Pope has actually been a pretty loud speaker in defense of, as you said, like persecuted Catholics and other Christians in places like the Middle East. He's also spoken up even for non-Christians like the Uyghur Muslims in China. He's spoken up for them and the
Rohingya.
Yeah, the Rohingya. Thank you. In Southeast Asia. So I think you find him defending Catholics and more broadly defending, you know, non-Catholic Christians, and even defending non-Christians who are being oppressed for trying to follow God, even if they're following him in the wrong ways, and then being oppressed by these atheistic or Marxist or communist governments. So I think I would be hard-pressed to find a world leader who's actually said more about oppressed Christians and oppressed believers around the world than Pope Francis.
If I may just step in real quick, Sandra, however, it does seem like you're not saying you reject the papacy. It's just this particular pope who is very bothersome to you. Would that be fair to say that you still are a believer that Christ instituted a church and a pope?
absolutely. When listen to Cardinal Vigano. I mean, you all heard him. This is not a good man. He's leading our church, and he's leading all of us. This is who he's leading. He's representing God. You know that. We all know that.
Right. I got you, Sandra. But the music's going to play in just a few seconds, so I want to tell you about a piece of media that we did for Catholic Answers Focus, and it's called What If Pope Francis is a Bad Pope? And we tackled some of these issues. Because there are many people who accept the papacy and accept the church fully, but have come to the conviction that Pope Francis is a bad pope. So what do you do if you've come to that conviction? Try our, just put in, what if Pope Francis is a bad pope, Catholic Answers, and you'll come to it.
Catholic Answers Live.
Here's a question. Is it really possible to be friends with someone who died 2,000 years ago? Maybe the problem is that we've grown way too comfortable with the story of Jesus. Nice man, right? Taught us to love one another, said not to judge people. We celebrate his birthday every year. It's time to put away this small, safe version of Jesus, says Cy Kellett. Nobody that bland could have transformed the world. In A Teacher of Strange Things, Cy presents Jesus Christ undiluted by sentiment, with all his radical words and deeds uncensored. Do you know someone, your son or daughter perhaps, or maybe your mom or dad, who needs the friendship of Jesus Christ? Do you? Order your copy of A Teacher of Strange Things by visiting shop.catholic.com today or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Catholic Answers is doing it again. We're holding our 7th annual Apologetics Conference this September in beautiful San Diego, California, and we'd like to see you there. Join us September 23rd to 26th for a lively and inspiring conference with an all-star lineup of speakers guaranteed to jumpstart your faith. It's a great chance to meet all your favorite Catholic Answers apologists and very special guests as we spend 4 days talking about worshiping and adoring our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. This is where it all begins. Don't miss what promises to be the event of the season. Join us this September for a conference that is sure to ignite, inspire, and inform your faith. Seats are still available, but they're going fast. Enter promo code EARLY to save $30. Visit CatholicAnswersConference.com or call 888-291-8000 to register.
How do you manage your stress?
We want to hear about it Monday on Take Two with Jerry and Debbie on most of these EWTN stations.
Now back to Catholic Answers Live.
If you say nope to the Pope, this hour is for you. I am Cy Kellett, your host. It's Catholic Answers Live. Joe Heschmeyer, the author of the book Pope Peter, Defending the Church's Most Distinctive Doctrine in a Time of Crisis, is our guest. And we're just talking to folks who reject the Pope or don't accept the Pope. And if that is you, you are welcome to call 888-318-7884. We go now to Owensboro, Kentucky. Daniel in Owensboro. You there with us, Daniel?
Yeah.
And why don't you accept the Pope?
But it's sort of a three-part thing.
Okay.
First part is, I don't accept Francis. I'm fine with the idea of a pope.
Okay.
Francis in particular, I've got problems with. I guess like the previous caller. Second part, I don't like the Vatican being in one place at one time. Personally, I think they should be like the original 12 apostles and be constantly on the move. Because as soon as a whole group of people all start to settle in one place at one time, things go corrupt. It's
okay.
Just the normal way of things.
Okay.
And then the third part is probably the biggest part that sort of explains my reservations about Pope Francis. And it's the papal audience hall.
Oh, okay. So
Can you say more about that?
He didn't make the papal audience hall. He didn't design it. It was before him. But that he permits it to exist, I think that thing needs to be burned to the ground.
And why? What's wrong with it?
The superimposition, the profile of the internals looks like a snake head. On the outside, Google Images, it also looks like a snake head. And then the effigy in the back, that does not look holy.
Okay.
And
all right,
and then the final part about it is nowhere in the building, on any pictures I've seen, in any of the pictures, even when the whole thing's filled with people, there's no crucifix.
Ah.
They don't let a crucifix in the building, and that's freaking me out.
Okay. All right.
Let's take those one at a time. Can I do them in reverse order? Because I think it's maybe easiest to do them in reverse order here.
But before you do, can I just say I want to go on record as being in favor of the Wandering Vatican. I like that idea. But go ahead. you start with your...
The Paul VI Audience Hall is, in my opinion, not an attractive piece of architecture. And it's kind of an embarrassment, given everything else. And the Vatican is so beautiful. Then you have this... kind of modern-looking monstrosity. But when I say monstrosity, I mean that metaphorically, just like it's architecturally very displeasing. The whole, it looks like a snake, comes from doing, I think it's called a bird's-eye lens? What's that kind of lens?
Fish-eye.
Yeah, fish-eye lens. That's not an honest look at what it looks like. A lot of things look weird when you look at them through like distorted lenses like that. If you go in the actual hall, or even if you look at it from the outside, it doesn't look like two eyes coming together. You can see from the externals, like there's no way it looks like that without doing something kind of funky with the lens. So that's just, Nick, that's a really bad reason to object to it, I think. But second, it's an ugly building. I think there are bigger problems than there being an ugly building. I think there are in the back, it is supposed to be Christ rising from the dead. Like, that is the focal point of it. It is an audience hall. It's not like an actual church. So, the ugliness of it is not like a super high priority for me. But, de gustibus, like tastes differ. And so in this, like, I think there could be maybe some difference of opinion in terms of how important it is to get like a more beautiful set of statues back there or something. On the Wandering Vatican, that is a kind of fun idea, but it hasn't gone well in the history of the church. When the church didn't have the papacy in Rome, things were not good, the Avignon papacy. And in terms of it being apostolic, I think it's a mistake to read just the moving as being apostolic. What I mean by that is if you read the book of Acts, we see pretty clearly that one of the apostles, James, is left to be a bishop over Jerusalem. He's not moving around. Well, the reason the other apostles are moving around is because they are apostles, which means like messengers. Like they're being sent to go spread the message of the gospel around the world. They're also establishing the bishops as their successors to govern and lead the places that they are setting up. Now, we need to continue that missionary endeavor, but we also need to take care of the places that have heard the gospel and then need some sort of governing structure. So in that sense, like the Pope is doing what a bishop does, and doing what James did, and doing what Peter did. So Peter goes to Antioch and then to Rome. And so tradition doesn't just have Peter going all over the world, traveling all around the way Paul does, but rather like setting up particularly important churches and helping to run them, and then going on to Rome, setting that up, and then dying. So he doesn't do a ton of traveling, from what we can tell. Paul is actually much more the exception than the norm in some regards. I mean, you also get it with Thomas, with the other James. There are apostles who move around, but then there are ones who don't do a lot of moving around. It doesn't seem like John moved much past Asia Minor. He set up the churches there. He writes to them in Revelations 1-3. And so, basically the idea of moving being like essential to the apostolic mission, I think that's something of a mistake because it's prioritizing the missionary endeavor at the expense of kind of the governance endeavor, which is also an important, like you've got to have both, if that makes sense. To put it another way, the Pope is called to be both a fisher of men and a pastor of the flock of Christ. As a fisher of men, he's going after new converts. As a pastor of the flock of Christ, he's taking care of those who are already part of the fold. And that's also an essential element of his job. So it's both and. And now, unfortunately, I actually forgot the very first part of what you'd said. So I apologize so much for that. Could you remind me of the other part that I didn't cover?
Francis?
It's just Francis in particular. I don't have a big problem with the idea of the papal see or apostolic succession. I'm fine with all that. It's just I think when they start to settle in one place at one time, when the head governance does that, that lends to corruption. That's when things start to go awry. I'm agreeing with you about bishops being assigned to certain places, but I think they should be changed out, just like a priests typically get changed out about every 12 years from their usual diocese. They get moved out. That's what happened with my recent priest here. And I think a similar thing should happen with the top order. They should always be on the move.
I think someone who would sort of agree with you, at least, is Pope Francis, who's tried to make kind of the inner ring in the Vatican more international to get different perspectives from different parts of the world. Now, you and I may not love every person he's chosen for that spot, but I think he's gotten some really good, like I think Cardinal Pell from Australia was a really good guy for him to tap and kind of get his perspective as someone coming from a very different part of the world with a very different perspective who could kind of come in and be a good critical voice on something like Vatican finances, for instance. So instead of like uprooting everything and moving everything all around, I think there really is, well, to be honest with you, I think there really is a scriptural basis and certainly a historical basis for connecting this to the city of Rome. But I also think that you can still get a lot of the international thing that you're wanting of having like the diversity of voices and experiences by making good use of the bishops of the world and just kind of humbly listening to what the rest of the world is dealing with. Pope Francis has tried to do that. I think it's been a mixed success so far. But I do know that, like, for instance, surveys were sent out to every bishop in the world asking them all about, like, the situation of marriage and family life in their diocese. I've got a couple of friends from the Democratic Republic of the Congo. And there, the big scandal isn't, like, divorce and remarriage. There, the big scandal is polygamy. And that's just something that, for all of our sexual faults in the U.S., isn't really a big one on the radar of most American Catholics. So it's helpful to have, you know, different cultures, different bishops, different experiences to kind of get a fuller picture, because I think you're right that otherwise you can get a little complacent. You can just get kind of a culture of kind of we do it this way. We've always done it this way. And I don't know that you're actually going to solve that very easily by just moving around a lot. I think one way you solve that is by being more attentive to other voices and experiences.
Daniel, I'm going to have to leave it there because there are quite a few other folks on the line and only have a short time left in this hour. Why do you reject the Pope? Why don't you accept the office of the papacy? If that describes you, you're welcome to give us a call, 888-318-7884. But we'll take a very brief break and come back and try to get to all the calls that we already have. Joe Heschmeyer is our guest. Right back.
This is Archbishop Paul Coakley, the Archdiocese of Oklahoma City, and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Do you love praying for people? Have you ever wanted to use your gift of prayer to share Jesus with others and build up the body of Christ? Start a public prayer station with St. Paul Street Evangelization. Listen to people's needs, pray with them, or invite them to meet you at church. St. Paul Street Evangelization can help you get started. Find out how at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
He is honored by the church as one of the greatest enemies of clergy sexual abuse.
Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
In his time, St. Peter Damian fought against the many vices of contemporary clergy, especially sexual abuses among the clergy. In 1051, he wrote the Book of Gomorrah that is still considered essential reading for fighting abuse today. He died in 1072.
For more about the Doctors of the Church, visit doctorsofthechurch.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Let me give you a little history. This really happened. Jesus Christ chose 12 apostles. He made one of them the leader. And he founded a church with a pope. They didn't have the word pope then. Jesus, as far as we know, never used the word pope. But that's the way he set it up. Disagree with me? Well, you could be a fellow Christian. You might not be a Christian at all. But if you disagree, you are welcome to call 888-318-7884 and speak with Joe Heschmeyer, who wrote the book, Pope Peter. Joe, ready to head back to the phones?
Yeah, I think so.
All right, let's go to Lorain, Ohio. John is listening on Living Bread Radio. John, happy to have you. Why do you reject the Pope?
Well, it's more general than that. I reject the alliances of the this Pope and others even more overtly in the whole Cold War against the poor and the oppressed of the world. I think the Church has been allied with the fascist elites in this country and around the world. And this Pope, I think, begin to realize people are beginning to see that connection and has adopted a cosmetic pose of being more in line with Beatitudes. And with all of the right-wing domination of our media in making a dirty word out of the words of progressive and social justice, I think he has, at least on the surface, given a more positive coverage to those kinds of struggles. But he, during the time in Argentina, when he was archbishop, many writers have pointed out that he was very accommodating to the CIA and U.S.-installed fascist military regime that tortured and killed tens of thousands of people in a dirty war in Argentina at the time. And okay. I think that kind of anti-communism has been a cancer on our country and on the Church that has justified the slaughter of millions of Koreans and carpet bombing and millions of Vietnamese and carpet bombing and around the world. And I think
John, if you will you let me come back to you, and we'll just stop right there, and we'll let our guest Joe Heschmeyer respond. But I do want to come back to you, all right? Because it feels like you had more to say. But let's get a response first, Joe.
Yeah, I think there's a few things to point out here. One, like, definitely in the Cold War, there were a lot more bad guys than there were good guys, and there were bad guys on both sides. But that doesn't make there any kind of moral equivalency. You know, so you've got, for instance, Pope St. John Paul II, who grew up under communism, who had a great idea of how brutal that was, the deadliest system in the history of the world. I mean, if we're just doing body counts, I think standing up to that in terms of anti-communism isn't some huge scandal in the Church. I think that's one of the noblest and bravest stances, and I think we've seen very clearly, what is that? Is it 9 days that or 13 days that shook the world? 9 days that changed the world, 13 days that changed the world, whatever it is. It's the documentary about JP2's trip to Poland, and it shows how, like, a million people show up and start chanting, "We want God, we want God," which was outlawed in Poland at the time. I mean, like, these people were risking police harassment and persecution and worse, and crying out for God. This is the closest you're going to get since the Holocaust to just a plain good versus evil struggle is this nonviolence resistance to communism that we see in Poland. And the Catholic Church plays this pivotal organizing role in that. In places where the Church wasn't as strong, for instance, in the Czech Republic, you now have a majority non-believers, which is the only European country that is majority non-religious, because the spiritual fabric of society was just utterly broken. And so you don't even have people who are nominally Christian the way you do in most of the rest of Europe. You have people who've just utterly despaired of God. So it's not just that the tremendous number of tens of millions of bodies, it's also something even worse than that, which is just breaking the souls of the people who are living under this terrible oppression. The Church was, in some cases, the only light kind of standing up to that around the world. Now, it's true that in some places, in 1930s Spain, 1970s and 80s Latin America, the people who were fighting against communism were in some cases pretty bad themselves. That doesn't mean that, like, communism isn't still bad. It doesn't mean that it's not still worse. So I think it would be very hard to say Pope Francis was in some way allied with the dirty war. He wasn't. He stood up against the government under Pinochet, Pinochet, right? He stood up against the oppression.
Chile,
oh, sorry, in Argentina.
Argentina, the Peronists and the Kirchners.
Thank you.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's he stood up for people. But there is that sometimes fine line you have to walk where the Vatican is standing up for truth and justice and human rights and religious freedom and the values of the gospel, but at the same time is trying to do so in a way that's actually helpful to the situation. So sometimes that means that we look back in hindsight and say, could they have done more here? And oftentimes the answer is probably yes. But I think it would be a mistake to throw the baby out with the bathwater there is what I would say just kind of broadly on that.
John?
Well, I think that kind of propaganda is what I turned me against, really, the church. I was brainwashed for the first 20 years of my life until I got other sources than the corporate CIA and Pentagon, military industrial complex, infested media, and it was an even more extreme form on through the Pope Pius types of papacies that justified, in the name of anti-communism, really genocidal death squads around the world that the CIA installed. And I think that until people begin to get other sources of information besides the Catholic Church, the corporate CIA media, that has been proven. They have hundreds of agents throughout all of the media.
If it helps, John, I've actually lived outside of the U.S., and so a lot of the media I've gotten, it hasn't just been like U.S. corporate controlled, although I think I'd be very hard-pressed to say that there's a right-wing domination of the mainstream media, if that was what you were saying earlier.
Well, certainly a CIA domination of the media, but I want to, John, to get free rein. I don't want to stifle what he has to say. I think we do have to defend Pope Pius XII against the charge that he supported death squads around the world. I don't think that there is any evidence of that. As a matter of fact, my own take, John, is that he was a saintly man, one that that had to be the Pope at a time, probably the most difficult moment for the papacy since Attila the Hun. So I do think nobody comes out looking perfect in that kind of, after that kind of stress. But I don't think it's fair to say he supported death squads around the world. Joe, you wanted to say something?
I actually could add even a couple things. The accusation that he was somehow pro-Hitler or neutral on Hitler is largely the work of communist propaganda, particularly with the play The Deputy from, I think, 1956. Because he was so strong against communism, the communists started to claim that he was a fascist, which is how the communists smeared everyone who was against communism, was to claim they were fascists or crypto-fascists or the like. That's just not true. You see him actually helping to hide thousands of Jews and helping to get people freed from the Holocaust, allowing the Vatican, if you've ever seen the movie The Scarlet and the Black, allowing the Vatican itself to potentially become embroiled in a conflict that it could be conquered by the Nazis who had already invaded Italy. They put themselves on the line. Could they have done more? People could always do more. But they did a noble thing at great expense, and to suggest that they were somehow allied with fascist dictatorship is, I think, a calumny.
I wish we could have more of a conversation, John. I appreciate it. But there's still folks on the line, and there is not very much time left. So I do thank you for your call. Bill in Salt Lake City, Utah, why do you reject the papacy?
Yes, I think the lady that called in earlier is correct about his not protecting Christians. If you look at the agreement that this Pope, who I don't think is very bright, signed with the Chinese government, and because of his lack of transparency, doesn't even allow people to see the agreement. I mean, George Weigel made quite a few comments about this, and those Christians in China are being persecuted. The bishops are appointed by the government. The cardinals have been persecuted. I mean, this Pope he's a Jesuit, for goodness sakes. He comes from the Jesuit order, and they're very liberal. And he's
I know Joe's habit is to take one thing at a time. So, there's no end to bad things you could say about Jesuits. Catholics do it all the time, but I don't want to go down that road. As the relative of a Jesuit, I can joke like that. But what about the accusation or the observation or accusation, however you want to put it, that the Pope is not protecting Christians, particularly in China?
Yeah, I think there's some merit to it, but not for lack of trying. So my old spiritual director was Monsignor Anthony Figueredo, who was one of the people who was on these secret Vatican missions to China. And so I know they were trying to find a way to figure out how to protect the underground Christians by giving them a little more legal cover to worship. And at the same time, trying to prevent a schism that is forming between the Patriotic Church and the Underground Church, where people are being forced to compromise their faith and put in these really bad situations. I mean, it's something like the Diocletian persecution. And so if there was a way to diplomatically get the Chinese to kind of lay off and to allow people to worship more freely, that's a big win for Christians. The difficulty, of course, is the Chinese government isn't trustworthy. And so, you know, a government that puts a million Uyghurs in concentration camps isn't going to also be a government that you can just make an agreement with and expect them to keep it, as we've seen. So the Chinese have really reneged on their end of the deal. But the deal itself, as far as we can tell, would have given a lot more freedom to ordinary Chinese Catholics. And so it was an attempt to protect believers. It's not entirely like it seems to me that the agreement we had with China has been a failure. I think you're right about that, Bill. But it's not as clear to me what could be done that would have been better.
Bill?
Well, I think standing up to the Chinese would have been helpful. I think St. John Paul the 23rd, or excuse me,
John the 23rd?
St. John Paul the
2nd oh.
would have stood up to the communists in China. I think this Pope, he didn't like Donald Trump. He didn't even know Melania was a Catholic. She's standing there with a rosary, and his handlers didn't tell him that she's from Slovenia and a Catholic. I just think this Pope is unaware, and it could be just because of his age or his intelligence.
Well, but, Bill, it sounds like, again, I'm sorry to keep interrupting you, but we really are limited on our time. Again, it seems like this is not a rejection of the papacy or the Catholic teaching on the papacy on your part. It's a disdain for the current pope. Is that correct, Bill?
That's correct. I just don't like this pope, and I don't think a Jesuit should be in the papal office.
Joe?
Well, I mean, I don't think there's anything morally requiring you to like him. I think you need to respect and obey him, probably not insult his intelligence, like treat him in a Christian, respectful, charitable way. Seek the best interpretation of what he's done. But that doesn't mean he has to be your personal favorite. I mean, that's something like that on the matter of emotion. You don't even have to form a judgment like that. So that's not spiritually required. I would say, like, don't go down the road of constantly feeding into the negative worst interpretation. That's bad for your soul. And that's the only thing that'll change. Like, you're not going to help the situation in China by ruminating privately about the Pope and you know, but you will hurt your own spiritual growth. So I'd say in that, like, I agree that there are some things that were handled pretty badly in the Chinese situation, but I think by good people. What I think we need to do in response to that is say, yeah, my job isn't to say, how much do I like this person? How much do I like that person? Pray for them, interpret their actions in the most charitable light, and then work out my own salvation with fear and trembling.
Bill, I'm going to say thanks. I'm going to go to Brandon in Texas. Brandon, you got to be quick if you'd like a response from Joe.
Sure, yeah. I've dropped out of RCIA because I couldn't rectify the current pope or the being a legitimate pope if Catholicos Catholic means universal, and there are clearly two separate sets of rules for the haves and have-nots, for pro-choice politicians and the average person.
I got you. Okay, that's very clear. I'm sorry that you dropped out of RCIA. I hope you'll keep listening and maybe call more. But Joe, what about this? Allowing communion even to those who are quite virulently pro-choice?
Yeah, I think it's a scandal. I think we're literally seeing. So the root of the word scandal is a stumbling block. And we've just heard from Brandon that he didn't move forward with RCIA because he stumbled over this. This is, by definition, a scandal.
Yeah.
So in that sense, I relate and I feel terrible for you, Brandon. I'm sorry. The thing I would say second is we see the first pope, St. Peter, committing a similar scandal of having first and second class people in Galatians 2 when he treats the Jewish and Gentile Christians in an unequal way, contrary to what the gospel calls for. And St. Paul reproaches him for that. That's no reason to reject the church. It's a reason to pray for the successor of Peter.
Brandon, I'd love to send you Jimmy Akin's book. It just went out of my head. The name of the book. Help me out. No, the love, the latest one, to help people into the church. Words of Eternal Life. Sorry, we had a communal brain cramp there for a moment. But if you'll hang on, I'd like to send it to you because it's important to us that you not be driven away from the church, but be continue to hear that call within you to come close to Christ in the Eucharist. But if you'd like it, hang on and we'll send it to you. Joe's going to stay with us. We're going to do an open forum next hour as well. We'll be right back to do that after this.